content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include, as unemployment falls, employers are looking to migrants to fill jobs, and companies fighting efforts by states to rein in drug prices. And we'll begin with, as unemployment falls, employers are looking to migrants to fill jobs. One of President Donald Trump's priorities, low unemployment, is complicating another, curbing immigration. With the number of jobs available exceeding the number of Americans seeking jobs, employers are looking beyond the border to fill openings, and migrants are coming to the country in search of work. Hotel and restaurant owner Todd Calwart is short more than two dozen workers this season for his Mackinac Island, Michigan businesses. You can't hire a line cook right now. It's impossible, even for $20 an hour, he said. We usually fill the gap with visa workers, but we can't even get those this year. The Labor Department said Friday the unemployment rate was 3.9%, near the 18-year low set in May, and employers are adding jobs at a faster pace than last year. Trump has made it clear employers should be trying to attract American workers through wage increases and other incentives, not filling jobs with immigrants. Curbing immigration is essential to growing wages and ensuring available jobs go to American workers, not foreign workers, Deputy White House Press Secretary Hogan Gidley said. As immigration curbs are put into place, more and more Americans will be absorbed back into the workforce, especially those who have been left out due to poor work history or difficult life circumstances. The administration has made it harder to come to the U.S. for work, legally or otherwise. Work visas are costly, complicated, and limited. Large-scale job-seeking migration through a porous border is long gone. This summer, the administration tried to deter would-be immigrants by adopting a zero-tolerance policy, prosecuting anyone caught crossing the border illegally. It resulted in nearly 3,000 children separated from their parents at the border, prompting international outrage. Trump eventually stopped the separations, and the government was forced by a judge to reunify families. Still, tens of thousands of people cross the border illegally every month, many seeking asylum from violence, but often they're coming because of the prospect of work. Dalla Edelson Bajuk traveled with his 12-year-old daughter from Guatemala to the United States, only to be separated from her at the border, reunited, and then deported home. Sitting at an immigration facility in Guatemala City, he said they came for work. I needed to try to make a better life for my family. I wanted them to have what I could not give them here, he said. There are many, many jobs in the States. Frandy Fraudville, 35, joined a wave of Haitians who came to Tijuana, Mexico from Brazil starting in 2016. Brazil welcomed Haitians after Haiti's 2010 earthquake, but Fraville grew tired of factory jobs in Mexico that barely allowed him to cover rent and food. And lured by the prospects of better work and joining family near Miami, he lined up with his five-year-old daughter at a border crossing. "I'll take whatever I can get," he said. Many economists say immigration is actually good for the economy, and migrants provide complementary work to the jobs Americans do. Despite Trump's push, some business owners say they just can't get Americans to fill the jobs. A.J. Erskine is vice president of Cowart Seafood Group, which includes a Virginia oyster company of about 75 employees. "Entry level is $12.13 an hour," he said. "I don't know how much higher we can go." He said the company has been in business more than a half century and that despite massive recruiting efforts, it can't keep American workers. "We just don't have people who want to come out and shuck oysters at 3 a.m, and I don't blame them," he said. Some, like Erskine, are willing to front the cost associated with a temporary work visa, about $4,000 per employee, for workers holding down seasonal non-agricultural jobs. But the visas are capped at $66,000 annually, with 15,000 additional visas this year. Economists say the hiring crunch could be eased in part by increasing the number of visas available during boom years and decreasing them when the economy is weaker. But those changes must be made by Congress. Those turning a blind eye to immigration status or hiring people with false identification face crackdowns by immigration agents. Agents raided an Ohio garden center in the summer, arresting 114 workers and accusing the business of unlawful employment of migrants and fraud. "It's not worth the risk for us to hire people we're not sure about," said Calawart, the hotel and restaurant owner. "But a lack of staff means the business can't grow," he said. Representative Dave Brett, Republican from Virginia, a member of the conservative House Freedom Caucus, said he did not think the lower unemployment rate would weaken efforts to restrict illegal immigration. "The irony is it makes it more transparent what the real problem of the labor market is," Brett said, citing about 10 million Americans not in the labor force. And next, elite firms stand to profit from Space Force. The cosmic rhetoric of a Space Force seeking American dominance in space, as President Donald Trump puts it, conjures images of stormtroopers, laser guns, and X-wing fighters. But the Pentagon is already working on technology designed to fight a war in space, rockets that could launch daily, missiles that would fly at 5 miles per second, satellites the size of shoeboxes, and robots that could fix them in orbit. Such efforts already amount to billions of dollars in government spending each year, much of it shrouded in secrecy under the classified military programs. And as the White House pledges to push for a Space Force as a sixth military branch and the first new service since the Air Force was created in 1947, an insular group of government contractors see a chance to profit. Byron Callen, a prominent defense stock analyst with Capital Alpha Partners, said Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Harris Corporation may be particularly well-positioned to benefit from Trump's Space Force. The new service could line their pockets for years to come, assuming Congress embraces the idea, because the Space Force will be a smaller service with fewer resources. It may be more dependent on industry for technical advice and policy input, said Lauren Thompson, a consultant with the nonprofit Lexington Institute, which gets funding from defense contractors. It would likely be more of a creature of industry than if the Air Force were kept intact. Throughout the history of human space travel, NASA has tended to get most of the glory, but the Defense Department has been focused on the stars since before Sputnik caused a national panic in 1957 and led to what is now known as the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, the Pentagon's research arm. Today, DARPA is working on a few programs that could ultimately fit under the mantle of a space force. Last year, it selected Boeing for its experimental space plane, or XS-1 program, which hopes to develop a space plane capable of flying 10 times in 10 days. Boeing's vehicle, known as the Phantom Express, would be designed to fuel up and go, taking off quickly like a commercial airliner. That is of particular appeal to the Pentagon, which wants to be able to put satellites into orbit quickly if, for example, officials learn that an adversary is getting ready to launch a missile or deploy a fleet of ships to sea. And with information age technologies making their way further into military operations, even the Army's ground forces rely on support from beyond Earth's atmosphere. The Global Positioning System, GPS, that numerous military systems rely on for geolocation is made possible by bus-sized satellites built primarily by Lockheed Martin and Boeing. Those satellites are hurled into space by firms such as Elon Musk, SpaceX, and the United Launch Alliance, ULA, a joint venture of Lockheed Martin and Boeing. Concerned that adversaries could jam or interfere with those satellites, the U.S. military has worked to make them more resilient. Instead of relying on large, expensive systems, defense officials are planning to launch swarms of smaller satellites into orbit, which they think will be harder to take out. DARPA is developing robots that could fly from satellite to satellite in space, refueling, repair damage, or update satellites with new capabilities as if it were an iPhone. The prospect that GPS communications could be knocked out through an attack on U.S. satellites has become so worrisome that the U.S. Navy recently added celestial navigation back into its required coursework for officers. Boeing is working on autonomous drones that can navigate without the help of GPS. The U.S. military is dependent on space across the full spectrum of conflict, from counterterrorism operation in Yemen to a major war with a near-peer adversary like Russia or China, said Todd Harrison, a military analyst with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Other countries have taken note of the advantages space provides to the U.S. military and are developing and proliferating counter-space weapons to negate our advantage in space. Another top Pentagon priority is developing a hypersonic missile, one capable of traveling at 5 times the speed of sound or more. In his speech at the Pentagon on his need for a space force, Vice President Mike Pence said that both Russia and China are investing heavily in the technology and that China claimed to have made its first successful test of a hypersonic vehicle just last week. On Monday, the Air Force announced it is awarding a $480 million contract to Lockheed Martin to develop a hypersonic strike weapon, a project that builds on a similar contract worth almost $1 billion awarded in April. Boeing also said it was investing in a British company that is working on hypersonic propulsion systems. For the time being, the federal space market is considered a niche business with tremendous overhead cost, available only to a handful of gigantic companies with the scale to compete. An internal analysis by Bloomberg Government found that the Defense Department spends about $4 billion a year on space vehicles, launches, services, and associated support. Most of that money is spent through contracts with three large companies, the Boeing-Lockheed Partnership Alliance, Lockheed Martin itself, and a California-based nonprofit research center called the Aerospace Corporation. Elon Musk's SpaceX was the fourth largest recipient of Defense Department space funding, Bloomberg found. And next, companies fighting efforts by states to rein in drug prices. States around the country are clamping down on pharmaceutical companies, forcing them to disclose and justify price increases. But the drug manufacturers are fighting back, challenging the state laws as a violation of their constitutional rights. Even more states are, for the first time, trying to regulate middlemen who play a crucial role by managing drug benefits for employers and insurers, while taking payments from drug companies in return for giving preferential treatment to their drugs. The bipartisan efforts by states come as President Donald Trump and his administration put pressure on drug companies to freeze prices and reduce out-of-pocket costs for consumers struggling to pay for drugs that often cost thousands of dollars a month. 24 states have passed 37 bills this year to curb rising prescription drug costs, according to Trish Riley, the executive director of the National Academy for State Health Policy, a nonpartisan forum of policymakers, and several state legislatures are still in session. The burst of state activity on drug cost recalls, the way states acted on their own to pass laws to expand health insurance coverage in the years before Congress passed the Affordable Care Act in 2010. In the absence of federal action, states are taking the lead in combating high drug prices, said State Representative Sean Scanlon of Connecticut, a Democrat. A bill passed unanimously this year by the Connecticut General Assembly illustrates a popular tactic. States are shining a spotlight on drug price increases as a first step towards controlling cost. Under the Connecticut law, drug companies must justify price increases for certain drugs if the price rises by at least 20% in 1 year or 50% over 3 years. Insurers must identify their 25 highest cost drugs and the 25 with the greatest cost increases when they file their annual rate request with the state insurance department. In addition, the middlemen known as pharmacy benefit managers must disclose the amount of rebates and other price concessions they receive from drug companies. Republicans have their own reasons for concern. As state legislators, we are responsible for the wise stewardship of taxpayers' money, said State Representative Norm Thurston of Utah, a Republican. The state spends a lot of taxpayers' money on prescription drugs through Medicaid, corrections, jails, state employees, higher education employees, and their dependents. We should be sure we're getting the best deal. In response to a bill introduced by Thurston, the Utah Health Department is studying possible ways to import prescription drugs from Canada, and he is working with a Republican state senator on a bill to require the reporting of price information by drug companies. California has adopted a law requiring drug companies to provide advance notice of price increases, together with a detailed statement of the reasons for the increases. In addition, insurers must file annual reports showing the percentage of premiums attributable to drug cost. Californians have a right to know why their medication costs are out of control, especially when pharmaceutical profits are soaring, Governor Jerry Brown said. Drug companies have filed suit to block the California law, which they describe as unprecedented and unconstitutional. The law exports California's policy choices to the rest of the country and violates the First Amendment by compelling drug manufacturers to explain their price increases, said the lawsuit, filed by the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. Pharma, along with the Biotechnology Innovation Organization, also went to court to challenge a law signed by Governor Brian Sandoval of Nevada, a Republican. The Nevada law requires manufacturers of diabetes medicines, such as insulin, to report detailed information, including the production cost for each drug, the amount spent to market it, the profits earned on its sales, and the amount of rebates paid to pharmacy benefit managers for sales of the drug in Nevada. Drug companies dropped the lawsuit in June after Nevada agreed that certain information in the drug price reports could be kept confidential. And next, skip student loan forbearance. Do this instead. Forbearance is a way to stop making student loan payments temporarily. It is not a long-term affordability strategy or a way to put off repayment indefinitely. And that means very few people should use it, probably far fewer than are doing so right now. In the second quarter of this year, 2.8 million federal student loan borrowers had loans in forbearance, according to the U.S. Department of Education. Almost 70% of borrowers who started repaying loans in 2013 used forbearance at some point in the next 3 years, according to the U.S. Government Accountability Office. A fifth had loans in forbearance for 18 months or longer. Many students didn't truly grasp what they signed up for when they scrambled to afford an education they were told they needed to succeed. Forbearance is the quick fix they turn to when the bill overwhelms them. But if forbearance isn't a good idea, what are borrowers in trouble supposed to do? Follow the guidelines. Use income-driven repayment to make your loan payments more affordable over the long term. Choose forbearance only for short, one-off financial crises, like when you have a big auto repair or a medical bill to pay. And here's why. What forbearance is that forbearance allows you to pause payments generally for up to 12 months at a time for federal loans. There are different types, but discretionary forbearance is the one that can creep up on you. It's available to anyone with financial difficulties, and there's no limit to how long you can get it for. Interest will keep adding up, meaning at the end of the forbearance period, you'll owe more than you did before. For instance, after putting $30,000 in loans on hold for 12 months at 6% interest, you would owe about $31,800. Think of forbearance as a last resort. It's too easy to renew it and let your balance grow, while also spending each month without factoring in a student loan payment. Because forbearance can be applied for virtually any reason, you want to keep that for a potential emergency down the road where you may not qualify for anything else, said Betsy Mayette, president of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors, a nonprofit that offers free student loan advice. What forbearance isn't? Forbearance is not the same as deferment, another way to stop making student loan payments. Deferment is a better option since you won't pay interest on subsidized student loans when they're in deferment. You'll qualify for deferment in certain circumstances, when you're unemployed, for instance. So ask your student loan servicer if that's an option before going with forbearance. Forbearance isn't as easy to avoid when you have private loans. Private lenders generally offer few ways to lower payments unless you've already fallen behind, Mayette said. But it's worth asking for interest-only or interest-free payments as an alternative. Smarter ways to get relief. Most people with student loans have federal loans, means they're eligible for income-driven repayment. These plans lower payments to a percentage of income. You can pay $0 if you have no earnings. To qualify, some plans require you to show that you can't afford the standard 10-year schedule. But one plan, called a revised pay-as-you-earn, is available to all federal borrowers. You can sign up for free at www.studentloans.gov. Depending on the plan and the type of loans you have, the government may pay part of the interest that accrues if your payments don't cover it. Your loans will also be forgiven if there is any balance after 20 or 25 years of payments. Income-driven repayment will help get you through a crisis, but staying on it for decades will mean owing more in interest. Under current rules, you'll also be taxed on the balance forgiven. Use income-driven repayment strategically by staying on it once you've found steadier financial footing. You can pay extra each month without penalty to get rid of your loans faster, and a lower payment is there as a safety net if you need it. This is your chance to take back control of your loans and to keep them from dictating the life that you can afford. A Japanese company is opening a plant in Lee County, filling 109 jobs. The Japanese company provides heat treatment to make engine parts, electronics, and other equipment more durable. It announced on Tuesday that it will open a plant and hire 109 workers. Thermotech made the announcement in Sanford at an event that included state and local commerce and political figures. Average wages will be about $35,000, the company said. The company, which has its headquarters in Nagoya, Japan, plans to invest $22.5 million in Sanford, according to a release from Governor Roy Cooper's office. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any questions, call us at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.